again from the IL Podcast Studio in the Baltimore, Maryland, worldwide headquarters of Inside Lacrosse. It's the D-Fly and Dixie Show, featuring Inside Lacrosse, Big Ten Network analyst, and my Blue Jay brother, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dix, let's get it. Hey, Dix, when you came in here, did you see what the studio looked like? What the heck happened in here?
It was a little messy, for sure.
So the guys that were in here before us were doing the D3 podcast, mm-hmm. Kinnear and Josh Davey.
Okay.
All right, so this microphone lost the little spit guard, the one I use. I had to put a new one on there, which isn't a problem. You know, it's probably a good thing. The mixing board was still on and had the hot mics going. There was an empty Trimeno bottle, which is usually the case.
Yeah.
And the headset was like thrown on the floor, and the adapter for the headset, the little thing that allows us to plug multiple headsets into the mixing board, was also like on the floor. It was as if there was a fire or something. They ran out of here.
Maybe their show was so good it was just the mic drop. They just ripped off their headphones and ripped out all the equipment and got out of here.
It looked like they ran out of here and ripped all their equipment out of here, which is not cool
because
most of this is mine.
It is.
That mixing board is mine. I think some of these mics might be mine.
It is a very busy time at the Inside Lacrosse headquarters.
It is. It's a beautiful
time. Especially
for
Matt Kinnear. I know Matt, I was interacting with him, communicating with him on last Thursday. And we didn't connect until Friday because he's like, I'm sorry, I was at three games. I was driving 900 hours and blah, blah, blah. So Matt Kinnear's a man of the people. He's working hard. Now, Josh Davey hand-delivered the new case of Trimeno a couple weeks ago.
So he's in our good graces.
He's in our good graces, but it sounds like that leeway is getting smaller and smaller and smaller. Because what is he? He's not involved in the editorial side, so he's not covering games.
Well, we all do a little bit here and there.
Right.
So Josh is.
It is game day.
Josh,
when we're recording this, and the Park Bruins have a big game this afternoon.
So Josh coaches a high school team, the Park, which is the MIA B conference team here. But Josh is our D3 guy. I don't know if he's ever told you, but he played at Lynchburg College.
Oh, he's told me before.
That's my point.
He's told me.
He talks about Lynchburg a lot.
Oh, so it really should be called the Lynchburg podcast instead of the D3 podcast?
No. They do a nice job of covering the whole landscape, mm-hmm. but it's a lot of Lynchburg, a lot of ODAC talk, mm-hmm. a lot of the Centennial talk, though, too.
Okay.
Josh has friends that coach all over in Division III and some other colleges, too. So he's got a good knowledge base.
Yeah.
They had a big one, by the way. I know we're going to get to some D1 lacrosse
because
that's what we're here for, but the Lynchburg Hornets.
They're great. They won the ODAC, right?
Yeah, they came out of, they were like the third or fourth place team and won the ODAC. So Josh is on cloud nine. Maybe that's why he was, or it could have been, you know, Kinnear's a huge Capitals fan.
Yes. Oh, the Caps won. We're recording this on Tuesday. The Caps big overtime win last night. Big overtime. I watched it.
Yeah, so Kinnear's over the moon right now. He's so excited. He's beside himself on social media. He posted some picture of a banner that's like the kind of banner you'd hang from the Raptors that said like third round of the NHL playoffs, Stanley Cup playoffs. So it's a big deal.
I was talking to Matt before I came in here to record. We had a nice conversation, me, him, and Jeff Shannon and Dan Ayburn. And I said to him, I said, I'm surprised, one, that you're here at work, and two, you don't look like any worse for the wear. But Matt's a dad now. He's a husband. But he did say, he said, well, the second round. He goes, next round, you know, now that we're playing the Lightning, I'll get after it a little bit harder. So.
Yeah. I told him, he said the same thing to me. He said, I just feel like I've been missing, like I didn't follow it the way I usually would have. I go, that's going to be the next 5 years of your life, man.
Yeah. Welcome.
It's going to be like a black hole.
Welcome to fatherhood.
Yeah. Where it's all going to be like that.
Yeah.
You're a Big Ten Network broadcast partner. Is probably pretty pumped that the Caps are moving on, too.
It was a lot of fun to watch. So we didn't get done Thursday night till late, and then Joe Beninati and I went and got something to eat, and they were playing showing the highlights of the Pens Caps game 4, and the Penguins won that game, and being able to listen to Joe and watch Joe watch hockey,
yeah.
The Caps, nonetheless, is entertaining to say the least.
It's got to be surreal to
be sitting
next to him, watching him watch.
It is. It's fun. And he can say some things that he wouldn't say on a broadcast. But it, he's, and then we were also watching the Winnipeg Nashville series. That was fun. And then Tampa Bay Boston. So we got a little bit of each, and it's just it was really cool to get his insights into each of those series, because he's, you know, he covers them. He's been covering the Cap since 1994.
I want to tell you about a story similar to your Joe B experience.
Okay.
There was one time something like that happened to me in particular. I used to work for the Ravens on game days in the press box, and they have a press lounge. You're familiar with these things. You've seen them in big football stadiums when you've done games. And I'm watching, it was a 4 o'clock game, and I don't remember who the Ravens were playing, but there was a report from Sal Palantonio. And Sal Pal is, you know, he's down on the field at the Ravens stadium, you know, he's on TV or something like that. And I'm standing there in front of the TV in the media room, and I'm eating something. Like, I literally got a plate of food. And I look over, and the TV is like over our heads, like mounted on the wall above our heads. And I look over, and who's standing next to me, also eating, but Sal Palantonio.
What?
Watching him on TV from an earlier hit from the field. And I just look over, and I'm looking at him. I'm looking at the TV. I'm looking at him. I look down at the plate of food he's eating.
Right.
It was just a crazy experience. I was like, wow, this is surreal. He's standing next to me looking at himself on TV.
Wow.
And that's probably what it was like with you and Joe B.
I've got another story that I could tell you. And I also would like to share some of my some backdrop on my visit to Ann Arbor.
Yeah, I want
to
hear about
Michigan.
This, you were there for a few days. Usually you're just kind of like in and out, right?
Yes. So I was there for a couple days, which was really, really nice. Great hospitality. Scott Kemp's the SID out there, did a great job. He was our point of contact for the Big Ten Network. He did a phenomenal job. Then you have Kevin Connery, who's now the head coach out at Michigan. So I was able to visit with him. My flight got all kinds of jacked up on Wednesday night, so I didn't get in till close to 3 in the morning on Thursday. So didn't have a lot of time to spend on Thursday, you know, getting a tour, catching up, that kind of thing, because the games had actually been moved up an hour. So our first game was at 4 o'clock. So that Friday, I took advantage and paid a visit to Coach Connery. We had a great conversation talking about the program, talking about lacrosse in general. Gave me a tour of the entire facility, $160 million. So you have the lacrosse field. It's for men's and women's lacrosse. It's for track and field, rowing, men's and women's soccer, and I know I'm forgetting something. Maybe wrestling and tennis, I believe. But I got to work out in the weight room, which is not a weight room, but a smorgasbord of a workout equipment. And for someone who doesn't get to exercise a whole lot because of a busy schedule and family life, it's that was great. That was a lot of fun. They have a track. It's hydraulic, so they can raise it to have, you know, those like raised corners, like
bank turns,
exactly. Or you can lower it to have it be flat. So you can whatever event or
that's really cool.
That's really awesome. They have this rowing tank that reminded me of Fear Factor. you know, you just like get in and you do this. So in inclement weather, which there's plenty of in Michigan, especially in the winter months. And then the lacrosse facilities were incredible. You know, the locker room, the meeting area, they have a space where they can do wall ball. The field itself, the University of Michigan Lacrosse Stadium, is 2,000 seats, but there's room on each end to expand another 1,000 if it warrants it down the line. Right now, they're walls, like concrete walls, and you can do wall ball and that kind of thing. So really, really incredible facility. But so I got a funny story for you. So Saturday night, Joe and I are getting ready for our broadcast, and I get a text from our buddy, Al Hernandez. And it's Al and his wife and a couple of their friends in Caps jerseys. And they say, "Don't tell Joe B we got it locked down tonight. Tell him to have a good broadcast. We got it, right?" So I show it to Joe. Joe loves it. And I go, "Hey, give me a thumbs up. I'll take a picture and send it back." So Joe does so. And I send the picture back to Al and his party. And they're like, "Oh, man, Joe B, we love Joe B. He's the man." So later on, I get a text from Al, and it's his face with Rob Carlin, and I think it was Craig Lachlan or Alan May, one of them, in the background. Rob Carlin is an anchor at Comcast Sportsnet or whatever they're called these days, covering hockey. So I'm like, Al's at the game. He's at the, what is it, Verizon Center now, or what's it called now? whatever the facility is.
A home facility of the Caps.
Yeah. So he's there. And what they do is they do a pre, in-game, and post-game show from the concourse where fans can just walk up, right? So Al takes this picture, and I'm like, okay, great. Then he texts me later. What he did was he walked up behind the set, and he holds the picture of Joe B up with the thumbs up on his phone, and the guys see him, and they're like, oh, my God, where'd you get that? And he explains the situation, so they, like, give Joe a shout-out. Al's on television. And then it's just like, what the hell are you doing? I had no idea he was at the game, but then he took it even farther and got the picture of Joe B with the thumbs up on.
That's awesome.
And they gave Joe a
shout-out. When was this?
It was Saturday night.
Saturday night. Okay.
When the Caps won 6-3 to go up in that series 3-2.
Man. Because Al was texting me on Thursday fun of you.
Oh, really?
On TV.
That sounds about right.
I'll show you those texts. It was funny. Oh, man. That's a good story.
Yeah.
All right, Dix. On to the lacrosse. Have you seen the bracket?
What bracket?
The bracket for the lacrosse tournament?
Yes, I have.
Yeah. So we don't need to cover the snubs and all that stuff. That has been hashed over many times on a couple other podcasts, too.
Yeah.
Terry Foy had a great podcast with
some reaction
from the
coaches. I listened to that. It was really good. It was really good.
That dropped on Monday. And then Abern and DeVitt, as Quint called him, Kyle DeVitt.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle DeVitt had their podcast on Monday. It came out on Monday. So
I will offer a couple of thoughts, though. First and foremost, I think, was it John Hart, the selection committee chair?
Yeah, John Hart, the athletic director at Richmond.
I think he's done a terrific job of being available. He was on the selection show on ESPNU Sunday night, and I thought Quint and Paul Carcaterra did a fantastic job grilling him and asking him poignant, relevant, pertinent questions, very direct. I thought both of them did a great job with that. But I like the fact that he's been available, he's been articulate, and transparent, I guess is the right word. I might not agree with everything that he says, but you got to give him a lot of credit for standing up and taking that. That being said, you know, we could go into a lot of different things, but they said they don't use the eyeball test typically, you know, the objective. Then how is Syracuse get a home game and not Cornell? That is all aesthetics. That is all business. And I've got no problem with it, but just come out and say it. Because Syracuse lost to Cornell head-to-head by 5 goals.
On April 10th.
Cornell is your Ivy League champion.
Just beat
the number one seed yeah, in the tournament, Yale. John Hart said that on Terry's podcast,
yeah,
that when they broke on Saturday night, Yale was going to be the number one seed with Maryland's loss in the Big Ten championship game. The only reason that Syracuse got a home game, and I get it, but just say it. It'll be prime time on ESPNU. It'll have a great audience watching it. Syracuse has one of the best, if not the best, fan bases in college lacrosse. They're going to show up at the game. If you have that game at Schoolcraft Field, I don't think you're playing 7:30 Saturday night or 7:30 Sunday night. And I know Syracuse always has to play that last game.
Yeah, they do.
Because of graduation. Okay. They've been doing it for the last 6, 7, 8 years. They have that final game on the weekend. So that game should be in Schoolcraft Field. That game should be at Cornell.
I completely agree with you.
But that changes everything. You probably don't get the gate that you're going to get at the Dome. You may not get as many eyeballs because that game would then become a 2:30, 5 o'clock. You know, the windows that will get great viewership, don't get me wrong, but not as much as those 7:30 window. So I thought that was just call it what it is. Just call it. You can't look at the body of work of these two teams and the head-to-head victory. That's got to be the most pressing element.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at the final RPI from the regular season, and Cornell is the Ivy League champion. They have an RPI of 9. Syracuse has an RPI of 11, and they just beat him head-to-head a few weeks ago. So
yeah,
it doesn't make much sense. It
makes no sense whatsoever. I thought Peter Milliman was very diplomatic about it. He was very professional about it.
He was great. On Terry's podcast, especially.
He's like, look, we're in.
We're happy to play, and we'll play whoever, whenever.
Yeah.
And that's been, look,
my vote for National Coach of the Year goes to Kevin Warren of Georgetown. That's a program, only 6 wins the last 2 years combined.
Has had some tragedy.
A lot of tragedy. Eddie Blatz a couple years ago passed away. Kevin's dealt with a lot, and he's a great guy. I know him somewhat on a personal level as well as a professional level, and he's as good as they come. He's a good egg. So great to see him have the success, and I do think he deserves Coach of the Year. 1A is Peter Milliman at Cornell. You know, Ben DeLuca was, depending upon who you talk to, forced out in Ithaca, and he was a very popular coach. He was having success. And then you get in Matt Kerwick, and that doesn't work out. And Peter Milliman is still not the, quote-unquote, head coach at Cornell. He still has the interim tag on him. And they go ahead and win the Ivy League championship against a team that I thought, and it's funny, like this is like the third week in a row. It's like, well, we thought they were the hottest team in the country, you know, and Yale, you know, loses in a game that they were winning. And the Big Red went on what, like an 8-9 goal run to effectively close that game out. And so you got to give a lot of credit to Peter Milliman and the Cornell Big Red. But that game at the Dome, it doesn't make any sense.
All right. So we've talked about some of the selections. Before we get to, we'll sort of, what I like to do is go through the bracket, pick the games of the first round and the play-in game, and we'll talk about sort of how the teams got there along the way. But first, I see you taking a sip of your Trimino. Mm.
Coconut pineapple for me today.
My first time having this.
You got it? Isn't it tasty?
It may be my favorite. I really like the orchard. Really like the orchard.
I love the orchard.
But this may be my new favorite, and I'll be honest with you. I looked in the fridge. The Inside Lacrosse staff loves Trimino.
The supply is dwindling.
It's dwindling. And there were only three options. I've had the other two. I was looking for an orchard where I didn't have it. And I said, I put my hands on this coconut pineapple. And I said, I don't know if I'm going to like that. It may be my favorite one. It's great. It also has 7 grams of whey protein and essential B vitamins to fuel your game. No sugars, no carbs, and only 28 calories. Trimino is ideal before, during, or after your workout or podcast. And it tastes great. Comes in 7 delicious flavors, including the new ones, Citrus Orchard Raspberry Limeade, and this delicious coconut pineapple, of course. You can grab them at CVS. You can find them at local retailers or on Amazon.com. Trimino increases energy and endurance and even curbs your appetite, so you play hard, not hungry. Protein has never tasted so good. So in the new Maverick Media Poll, let's cover this real quickly. The Terps.
I didn't even bring in my top 10.
Yeah, the Terps.
I did vote, but I didn't bring in my top 10.
The Terps enter the tournament as the number one team and the number one seed. And some of the top 10 really reflects kind of how the seeding went for the tournament. Maryland is the number one in the Maverick Media Poll. Albany's number two. Duke and Yale are flip-flopped. Duke's 3. Yale's 4. Blue Jays, after their win against Maryland and their Big Ten tournament championship, they're number 5. Loyola's number 6. Cornell's number 7. Notre Dame, 8. Denver is number 9. They fall hard. Virginia's number 10. 3 of the bubble teams, this is interesting, in the Maverick Media Poll this week. Rutgers, Ohio State, Bucknell, who didn't get in, all ahead of Villanova in the Media Poll.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Interesting. All right.
Ohio State and Rutgers are better lacrosse teams right now than Villanova. And I'll even say Bucknell as well. You look at the Big Ten, and they beat up on each other. And outside of Michigan losing 13-5 and 18-6 to Maryland and Rutgers, Ohio State lost to Penn State 12-4. But that was a game where Colby Knies had 16-17 saves for Penn State. I don't know if there's any other game that was decided by more than 3 goals. So it was a very competitive league. You look at the conference tournament, Rutgers gave Maryland everything they could handle, 3-goal loss without Kieran Mullins in the lineup. Hopkins has to score a fluke goal late to win by a goal, 6-5. And then that, I said it to my boss at Big Ten as well as Joe as we were getting off the air the other night, even though Hopkins won that game by 3, that had the feel of a 1-goal game. Like, that had the intensity and the feel of a 1-goal game. So, again, I know this conference better than I know the other ones just because that's what I've covered the last, almost exclusively for the last 5 weeks. We did have several great out-of-conference games, and I watch all the other games as well. I mean, Rutgers and Ohio State, can you imagine if it was Duke-Rutgers? That's where John Donowski went to college. He is a Scarlet Knight.
Yeah.
He might be the leading all-time scorer in their history. If he's not, he's up there, you know, amongst the best. And then Duke, Ohio State, a replay of last year's quarterfinal. And Ohio State has beaten Duke the last two times they played in the NCAA tournament. First round in 2015, I want to say, and then the quarterfinals in 2017. So, but you know what? You can't hate on Villanova. I really like Mike Corrado. He and his staff do a fantastic job. They've got a really, really talented team, and they do have some really big wins this year. So best of luck to the Wildcats.
Sideline Swap. It's where lacrosse players buy and sell their gear. Shop heads, helmets, shafts, and gloves up to 70% off. Or snag hard-to-find college gear. And all purchases are backed by Sideline Swap's buyer guarantee. Head to sidelineswap.com. That's SIDELINESWAP.com. Sidelineswap.com. Or download the Sideline Swap iPhone app today. All right, so let's go through the bracket, as I said, and we'll look at we'll pick the games, and then we'll look at how they got there. So the tournament kicks off tonight, May 9th, when Canisius, the champions of the MAC, take on Robert Morris, the champions of the Northeast Conference.
Shocking. Really shocking that Robert Morris is in this game. There's no rhyme or reason as to why the Colonials have to play the play-in game.
Yeah, a lot of indication would be that that Richmond would be the team that would go in there. And it kind of even works out with the travel that the NCAA looks at, that, you know, Pittsburgh to
Robert Morris
Albany.
Is in Pittsburgh. Yeah, it's a lot shorter than Richmond, Virginia to Albany.
Yeah, and Robert Morris is the 17th ranked RPI team. Richmond is the 29th ranked RPI team. So it is a bit of a shock. Canisius, though, what a great tournament win for them. They come into the MAC tournament at 6-8, but they play a really exciting brand of lacrosse. It was fun to watch them play. They got the win over Detroit Mercy.
I had the opportunity to watch Canisius up close and personal at the end of February. And first things first, their coach, Mark, and I'm going to butcher his last name, really, really good guy. Really good guy. And you could tell the kids believed in him. And they had a great guy.
He's in his first year, right?
Yes, because Randy Mearns left to take the St. Bonaventure job. And I got to know Randy Mearns when he was coaching Canisius, and I had them in the first round back in 2012 against Loyola. And also got to know Coach Mearns a little bit in the World Games in 2014 when he was coaching Canada. And he's a terrific guy. So Canisius is very fortunate. Those players are very fortunate to have had Randy Mearns, and now they have Mark, I believe it's Miyashita, or Mirashita. I'm completely butchering your name, Coach. I apologize. That's why I always call you Coach whenever I see you, or Coach Mark or Mark. But you could tell those kids love playing for him, and they're very, very nice group of kids and a good, good team. Detroit Mercy, you have to feel for those guys. They gave up a late goal that forced them to go into overtime, and then just a mistake, you know, the win the face-off and try to get back to your goaltender and just underthrown right to a Canisius player who slots at home. And exciting game. You know, you got to love the MAC, the level of competition and the level of excitement that those guys have. They just want to get to the NCAA tournament, you know. And obviously they want to advance and win a national championship, but the pressure that's on a Johns Hopkins or a Maryland or a Notre Dame or a Syracuse, that's not the pressure that's on a Canisius or a Detroit Mercy. So that was really fun to watch.
Robert Morris gets into the tournament with the championship in the NEC, beating St. Joe's Hawks team, which came in undefeated in NEC play in another great game.
Fantastic game, and hats off to Robert Morris. I'm actually very, very fortunate in that I will have a first-round game for ESPN. I will have the Maryland game, and they will take on the winner of Canisius, Robert Morris. So I'm looking forward to, again, covering the Terps, but also being able to cover Canisius and or Robert Morris as a broadcaster. But hats off to the Colonials. They lost to St. Joe's just a week ago, and that's much very similar to Johns Hopkins beating Maryland after a week. St. Joe's couldn't pull off the double victory, and you got to feel for the Hawks. They've been the number one seed now in the neck for a couple of years, or at least a 1-2 seed, and they just miss again. I was talking about it with Matt Kinnear, and I don't think they've ever been to the NCAA tournament. They've always been that close. So you feel bad for St. Joe's, but you have to feel really good for Bobby Moe.
Since you're doing this game, I don't think you should be picking it, but I'm going to take Robert Morris. They just seem like a team that, RPI-wise, they've had is 17, Canisius is 49. They have had a really strong season with some good wins. I will take Robert Morris. They will play the Maryland Terrapins. Tell me about Maryland. They're the number one overall seed. You've seen them play a bunch of times, but they're coming off a loss to Johns Hopkins in their last game.
Yeah, so the game will be Sunday, 12 noon, ESPNU. Maryland versus the winner of Canisius, Robert Morris. I think if you're Maryland, what I took away from the tournament was a tale of two Bernharts. Jared Bernhardt was brilliant in the semifinal win against Rutgers, and he was erased in the championship game against Johns Hopkins. Give a lot of credit to Patrick Foley. Second game in a row, he held him to no goals. Connor Kelly was 0 goals in the first meeting as well, but he finished 2-2, but I believe he had all 4 points in the first half. So you got to give a lot of credit to Owen Caldwell, Robert Kuhn. They're the two primary guys that covered Kelly. But I thought that Hunter Moreland played out of his mind in the championship game. Right off the opening faceoff, scored a goal there. And Maryland, just John Tillman told us at halftime in our interview that he didn't recognize his team for the first 8 minutes. And that was the exact reversal, I thought, of what the game would be. Hopkins coming off of an emotional, physical 6-5 win against Ohio State, which featured a bench-clearing brawl. I thought they were going to be slow to the whistle on Saturday night, and they took it to Maryland. But this Terp team is so well coached. They're going to be prepared. A loss at this stage of the season is not the worst thing in the world. Remember, they lost to Ohio State in the 2015 Big Ten semifinals, and they made it all the way to the championship game that year against Denver. I don't know. This is a Terp team that played with a lot of heart. They came back, and they just didn't have enough in the tank to counter Johns Hopkins, who possessed the ball a lot. But I look for Maryland to regroup and be refocused and to be ready for an NCAA tournament. You know, I expect Maryland, why would you bet against the Terps? You know, they've been to championship weekend, what, 7 out of the last 8 years or 6 out of 7? I don't know the exact numbers, but, I mean, they've got a tough road to hoe. But, yeah, Maryland is the real deal.
Yeah, so in that game, I'll pick Maryland again. You're covering that game, so we'll leave you out of the prediction business for that one. Moving down the bracket, number 8 seed is Syracuse. They come into the tournament 8-6. They will take on the Cornell Big Red, champions of the Ivy League, 12-4. We talked about the seeding there and how, you know, maybe it should be flip-flopped game at Cornell instead. I don't know. I like Cornell in this game in a rematch.
Tip your cap to Syracuse. They had Colgate in a game that was everything to them and nothing for Colgate other than pride. And they blew the Raiders out. So you have to give a lot of credit to Syracuse for staying focused and winning that game. That being said, dome advantage. Not only did the committee give Syracuse, in my opinion, an unwarranted home game against a team that beat them head-to-head, they also gave them a huge home field advantage by putting the game in the dome. That's a pick 'em. I mean, that really is a pick 'em because I think Cornell was the better team. They showed that the first time around. Here's the other thing, too. Will Syracuse shut off Jeff Teat? You saw Brown shut off Jeff Teat in the semifinal on Friday night. And I know Yale took a lot of heat for not shutting him off.
It's called Teat Heat.
Teat Heat? Okay.
Yeah, Teat Heat.
But
it was talked about a lot during the broadcast.
It was. But Yale didn't have, I don't want to sound silly, but they didn't really have time to put in a shutoff defense. They had a 48-hour, 36-hour turnaround, right? So you do have to game plan those kinds of things. If you're shutting off, this becomes your responsibility. That becomes your responsibility. Yale didn't have time to plan for it, in my opinion. And I don't know if Yale would have done it anyway. I mean, they got a pretty darn good defense, a better defense than Brown. But that being said, Syracuse does have the prep time. They do have the necessary practices to go ahead and put this in if they do decide to put this in. I think Cornell's the better team. Syracuse, though, has everything else going for them. So I don't know who I'm picking. How's that for an answer? I'm taking the coward's way out. I am. I'll raise my hand and tell you I don't feel like picking.
I just want to be on the record as saying you've given me a hard time about that exact same thing.
All right, then I'll take Cornell. There, you happy? I'll take Cornell.
Yeah, I'm going to take Cornell. And one of our listeners responded, Logan, CLNS Logan, said he thinks Cornell is going to make a run and wins it all in a championship game over Denver.
I was going to be a smart aleck and say your question doesn't count because you didn't call in.
Yeah, you got.
Did anybody call in this week?
No
calls. No calls?
Yes.
You scared them all away.
People are scared. They're scared. All right, so moving down the bracket. Johns Hopkins Blue Jays. Big win. Big win against Maryland. They're 11-4. They're in the number 5 seed. They will play the Georgetown Hoyas. One of the feel-good stories. Bid stealer, though. Bid stealer. They entered the tournament 12-4. They've had a really nice season. One of 3 Big East teams to get into the tournament. And they will play on Sunday at 5 o'clock at Homewood Field.
Yeah, Johns Hopkins, a lot of momentum coming into this, winning the Big Ten. But here's what you worry about. You know, how many times college basketball, for instance, you're watching a conference tournament, let's say it's the SEC tournament or the ACC tournament or the Big 12 tournament, and I don't know, let's say in the SEC, like, let's just say Texas A&M. But are they even in the Big 12 or SEC anymore?
They're in the SEC.
Are they in the SEC?
Yeah.
So let's take, like, Texas A&M goes and upsets Kentucky. And you're like, oh, my God, they're red hot. I'm taking them. And then they're a team that kind of fizzles. That's what Hopkins has to be guarded against, because they're going to be playing against a team that they spent a lot of emotion, a lot of energy winning that Big East championship, but so did Johns Hopkins. So it's going to be really, really interesting. First time these two teams, I believe, have played since 2007 when Johns Hopkins beat Georgetown in the quarterfinals. Actually, is this the first time that Syracuse and Cornell? Oh, no, they just played. I'm sorry. But this is the first time they played in the tournament, I believe, since the 2009 championship game. Remember the 2009?
Oh, yes.
The 2009 come-from-behind Syracuse victory.
That was Matt Abbott and those guys, right,
from Syracuse? Abbott and Dan Hardy and, those
against
guys.
Sebald and John Glynn.
John Glynn, Max Sebald. Yeah, you got it.
Young Rob Pinnell.
Yep. So.
Yeah, it's funny that Hopkins and Georgetown don't play more often, considering the proximity of the schools and the level of play.
Well, I think that Hopkins has already got their traditional rivals, and then with the Big Ten play, I mean, they had to drop Navy this year, so that was very difficult. And Georgetown plays a traditional schedule as well. But yeah, you're right. We played Georgetown when I was at Hopkins in 1993. We played them, and it was a pretty good game. I mean, they were just getting started out under Dave Yurick and starting their ascension, but. This is an interesting game. It's an interesting game. But I think, you know, all things considered equal, you got to go with Hopkins in that
one. Yeah, I'm going to pick the Blue Jays, too. That's a shock to everyone who's listening, I'm sure. Right. But I just think they're
Johns Hopkins versus Team USA. Dan Flynn, what do you think? I think Johns Hopkins is going to win that one.
Who's coaching?
Yeah, right. Ditka or God?
So
I don't know. I heard that God guy's pretty tough.
The last game of the pod that will go on to play at Navy Marine Corps Stadium in Annapolis next Sunday is Duke versus Villanova. Duke is the number 4 seed. They're 13-3. Highly rated all season, pretty much in the top 5 all year, also number 1 team for a few weeks at the beginning of the season, and they'll play Villanova, 10-5, one of the bubble teams,
the last team that got in. So Villanova can erase all doubts by pulling off a huge upset against the Duke Blue Devils. I don't see it happening. I see Duke winning this game. Justin Gutterding has been just fantastic, close to 100 points on the season. He's been terrific. I would be shocked if he's not invited to D.C. for the Tewaratawn ceremony. That being said, I mean, you know, look, this Duke team is not, they're not world beaters. They were my preseason number 1. I'm not so sure I have that confidence with them starting out the NCAA tournament, if they are going to win, let alone be in Foxborough. You know, I'm not 100% sure, but this is a very, very good team. Gutterding's an outstanding player. If they get goaltending throughout the tournament, they can go really, really far. But in this game, I do believe Duke will be better than Villanova.
Yeah, I'm going to pick the Dukies as well. I think they're going to...
What was that, 13-9 victory against Boston BU to close out the...
I think they're going to have a huge game. I think
they could be. They
could. They beat Villanova handling.
They didn't do what Bucknell did, and that's lose to BU.
Yeah.
And that's what really ruined it for the Bison.
Speaking of Bucknell, Fan Lax Lacrosse asks us, can either of you explain how Bucknell was left out in the cold? Makes zero sense.
Sure. You lose first round, quarterfinals, not even the semifinal. You don't even get to the semifinals of your own tournament. You lose in the quarterfinal round at home to Boston University. Your strength of schedule is a 30, and the RPI was what? Remind me what Bucknell's RPI was. I think it was like 17, 16?
16.
16, right?
Yeah. Villanova was 13.
Yeah. So there you go. Those are your reasons. If they would have beaten BU, they would have played Loyola, right?
No, they would have played Navy.
No, they would have played Loyola because Navy played Lehigh.
No, but remember...
Oh, the reseeding. Yeah, you're so right, the reseeding.
So they would have played Navy?
No, Loyola was the number one seed.
And Lehigh was the 4-5 game against Colgate. BU was the 6th seed.
I see.
Bison
okay.
were the 3
My apologies then. Yeah. Okay, I see. But even playing Navy would boost the RPI a little bit.
Yeah,
right?
Again, there's something to be said of like you don't make the conference semifinals of your tournament, even a league as deep as the Patriot League, which really had like seven. I mean, Army, I think the Patriot League had 7 good teams this year.
I don't disagree. And at probably, what, 2 weeks ago, we were saying, is the Patriot League a 3-bid conference?
Yeah.
After Navy beat Syracuse, Bucknell was hot, as hot as any team in the country, and Loyola is Loyola. They're the grand poobahs until proven otherwise. So, I think we just gave you 3 really good reasons why Bucknell didn't make the field of 17.
Now, on the other hand, they had some good wins throughout the year.
No question, the Loyola and Yale wins.
Yeah.
There's no bubble team that had that combination of wins. Ohio State had Maryland, Rutgers had Syracuse, Villanova had Yale, right? Nobody had the 2 marquee wins that Bucknell did. But it's not just about those wins.
Agreed. So there you go, FanLax Lacrosse. Hope that answered your question. All right, let's move down the bracket to the other side of it. Number 3 seed Yale, 13-3, will play the first game of the tournament. They'll play UMass, who wins the CAA at noon on Saturday. I'm excited to watch UMass play. I haven't seen them play all season long. I think Yale is still one of the best teams in the country. They're a complete team. I'm going to pick the Yale Bulldogs in this one, though.
Remember 2006 when UMass went into Scholl Field and beat a favored Cornell team by 1 goal, I believe. Cornell had Joe Belukis, an All-American midfielder. That was a UMass team that was led by Sean Morris, Doc Schneider in the goal. The defenseman, Jack Reed. Jack Reed, the defender. I don't know if UMass is going to replicate that upset of an Ivy League team, especially a Yale team coming off of a loss. Maybe besides Maryland, I don't think any coach responds to a loss as positively in terms of preparation and refocus as Andy Shea at Yale. So I agree with you. Yale's going to win this game. But UMass has had a terrific season and could continue it with an upset. But I just see the Bulldogs winning in this game.
That would probably be one of the bigger stories of the season, if Yale's knocked out in the first round.
I have to go back and look, but haven't these two teams already played this year? Didn't they already play? Let me check real quick. See how fast my iPad can work here. Schedule. Yale.
They won 13-10.
There it is. Yeah, there it is. I thought they had played already. February 27th, Yale won 13-10. So, but hold the phone. First time they played Cornell.
They also won 13-11.
13-11. Coinkydink? Dink? Maybe.
What are you talking about? All right. So I think we're in agreement. We both like Yale. In number 6, Loyola, 12-3, enters a tournament. They will play the nightcap game on Saturday in what should be an awesome environment over at the Ridley Athletic Complex against the Virginia Cavaliers, one of the at-large berths.
Loyola fan base, I remember the days back in Diane Jeppe Aiken's field.
Remember when it was Curly Field, even back before
that? Curly Field, the AstroTurf.
The largest piece of AstroTurf on the East Coast.
Is that what
like
it was?
It was a giant, it was much bigger than just like a lacrosse field or soccer field.
They always had interesting turf over there. Like it was more like carpet, like literally like carpet than it was AstroTurf. But I can still remember... This was back in the early days of Inside Lacrosse when the periodical was in newspaper form. And there was some knucklehead Loyola student. They were playing Delaware. And I think it may have been in the NCAAs. If not, it was toward the end of a regular season because it was warm. And the guy was like painted green like the Incredible Hulk.
It was Terry Foy.
Yeah. And he was smashing eggs.
Young Terry Foy.
Blue hen eggs on his head. That sounds like something Terry would do, actually. He is from Cleveland. So, no, all kidding aside. But it'll be a great crowd. And that's a primetime game, 7:30. Obviously, all these games are on ESPNU. But that's going to be a gem because these two teams always play a fast pace. It's always in double digits. And it typically goes overtime. But it's... Outside of that, it'll be, you know, 1-2 goal game in all likelihood. It'll be interesting to see the improvements of each ball club. I think Loyola wins this game. I think they're the better lacrosse team at this point in time. Defensively, I have some questions about, you know, for Virginia. For Loyola, it's more they've got terrific short stick D midfielders, but I think sometimes they stay on a little too long and play a little too long. Get the offensive midfielders on there. Do your job. You can occupy your guy if you want for a little bit. Do that little ring around the rosy, but then get off the field. So we'll see. You know, I just feel like in games where Pat Spencer gets the ball more and the offensive midfielders are on the field more, Loyola has better success. So we'll see how that shakes out on Saturday night, but I will take Loyola as well.
Yeah, and again.
Or no, did you even make a pick? Or
no, not yet.
I just picked Loyola twice, so.
That's fine.
I'm reiterating my pick from a few seconds ago.
Again, this is one of the four rematches from the regular season. Virginia beat Loyola 13-12 the first game of the season back in February 10th down in Charlottesville. This time around, I agree with you. I think Loyola has become the better team, and they're rounding in form. I like the home team in this one. I'll take the Loyola Greyhounds. All right, two more games to go. Number seven, Notre Dame, 9-5 ACC champions, will play the Denver Pioneers, 12-3, coming off a bit of a head-scratcher, 8-3 loss at Georgetown.
And this is a Denver team that a lot of people were questioning as a home game to begin with. But, you know, you go ahead and you win the Big East championship, then all's good. RPI of 9, I believe, top 10 RPI. But once Denver lost, you're thinking, has this team gone from a home game with a win to now maybe not making the tournament? I mean, you can make an argument for them not to make the tournament. And many people have said the broken RPI, prime example, is Denver. Because you look at their schedule, and their best win is against Ohio State now, in addition to their wins over Georgetown and Villanova in the Big East regular season. I mean, you want to talk about the most broken situation with the RPI was at Penn. Was what, 11th in the RPI entering the Ivy League tournament? A loss, and they were finished. Not only lost, but they lost by, what, 15, 16 goals. But, man, Trevor Baptiste, Notre Dame won the regular season meeting, but don't forget Denver lashed Notre Dame last year in the NCAA quarterfinals at Hofstra. I think this is a pick 'em as well. As well as Denver has, I mean, as well as Notre Dame. How about Notre Dame? They roll through the ACC tournament, really rolled in the championship game, and then they blitzed Army. This past weekend. So much like Syracuse having to take care of business the way they did against Colgate, Notre Dame did the same thing against Army. I think Notre Dame is seeded too low. I think they deserved a higher seed based on their body of work and their metrics. I think they finished second in strength of schedule, third in the RPI. Fifth in the RPI. So but I think they deserved a higher seed.
Who would they bump?
Who would they bump? Maybe Loyola. They could go higher than Loyola. Somebody asked me that question on, I did a Twitter conversation on Inside Lacrosse.
On Sunday night, right?
Sunday night, yeah. That was a lot of fun. I always enjoy doing that. Let me see. I can't remember who I put down as my top 8 seeds. I could look it up real quick.
Again, this is, again, one of the four rematches. I don't know if you said this, but.
I did not say it.
Notre Dame beat Denver earlier in the season. In South Bend, 11-9. I think this was the hardest game of the weekend to pick for me, this and the Cornell-Syracuse game. I guess that's why it's the 8-9 and 7-10 matchups, technically. But I like the Irish in this one.
My top 8 seeds would have been Maryland, Hopkins, Duke, Albany, Notre Dame. So I would have put Notre Dame 5. Yale, Syracuse, Loyola. And I actually, looking back on this, I'm really surprised I put Syracuse there. I should have put Cornell at 7 or 8. But, you know, you're answering those questions so quickly, trying to get to the next one. So, yeah, there's your answer. I would have bumped Loyola down. Yeah, Loyola. Loyola would have been bumped down.
So you got a prediction in
this one? And Yale would have been bumped down. Do I have a prediction in this one? What game is it? Notre Dame Denver?
Yeah, I like the Irish.
Wow.
I think this is the toughest game of the weekend.
Could be. The Baptiste factor. And let's not forget, so Denver lost or won 6-5 over Georgetown. And then they just lost 8-3. And the week after they only scored those 6 goals, they came out and hung 22 on Villanova. So watch out. I'll take Denver. I'll go for the upset here. I'll take the Denver Pioneers.
All right, last game of the weekend on the bracket that we need to pick is number 2, Albany. Champions of the America East Conference will play Richmond. Thrilling winners of the SoCon. Albany is number 2 seed. Richmond somehow gets, I guess, like a 15th seed, if that's the way you want to call it. This game will be on Saturday at 5 p.m. on ESPNU. Thoughts?
Richmond's a really good team. Congratulations to the Spiders for winning the Southern Conference and the automatic choir that comes with it. You guys don't belong in this game. You should be playing in the playing game. And then subsequently with the opportunity to head to the University of Maryland, I do believe Albany will win this game. Albany will win this game.
I think Albany, too. I think what I want to see some things out of Albany. I'd like to see their offense get going.
I thought they got going against Vermont.
You know, T.D. Erlin won 28 out of 29 faceoffs.
Mm-hmm. He's got an opportunity to do it again against Richmond.
Yeah, I can only laugh. I mean, he's fantastic.
He is. But think about it.
I'd like to see the Connor Fields healthy.
Well,
I don't know what his status.
Yeah, he didn't play in the America East Championship, so maybe it was a holdout situation for you know, keep him fresh for the tournament or as fresh as he can be. I got no problem with that. I know right when the brackets came out, I looked at Albany right away. And said, oh, man, if it goes Notre Dame-Albany, you know, the Irish are the team that has knocked the Danes out of the last two out of the last three quarterfinals. 2014, the come-from-behind victory at Hofstra. And then 2015, I think they dominated the Irish up in out in Colorado at in whatever they call it these days. The old Mile High Stadium. Was it Invesco Field at Mile High?
It was Sports Authority Field.
Sports Authority Field, yeah. So, but I failed to realize that if Denver wins and Albany wins, you're going to have Erlin versus Baptiste at the dot.
A lot of people want
that.
To see that
is going to be something to see. That will be something to see, yeah.
So, Dix, it's time for our give and go.
What do you got?
A topic we haven't covered in a long time, food.
I can get behind that.
All right. So
I just worked out last week for the first time in God knows how long, and I haven't worked out since. So
I know you were just out in Ann Arbor.
Yeah. Oh, did my Zingerman's story?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's a famous deli out there. They make some of the best sandwiches. So let's do top 3 sandwiches.
Am I including my Zingerman's experience in this one?
Sure. I want to hear about it.
Okay.
I've never been to Ann Arbor, so I want to hear about it.
Okay.
I've seen it on, you know, like
Campus Eats.
Campus Eats. I caught an episode of the Campus Eats.
It's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah, they had a good place in Buckeye Donuts.
When I was in Columbus for the Ohio State Michigan game, I went out of my way to go to
Buckeye Donuts.
Buckeye Donuts. Yeah. They were good.
It was good. Did you get the Buckeye?
Yeah, of course.
So it's a chocolate ice drink donut with peanut butter
in the middle.
Slapped in the middle.
Yeah.
It does look pretty good.
It was good.
It looks pretty good. Okay, best sandwich spots you've ever been to. So let me hear this. Is that going to be in your top 3, or do you want me to go first?
Look, Zingerman's has to be now in my top 3. So I went to the Big House last year for Ohio State, Michigan. It was an 11 a.m. face-off, and I made the mistake of not getting a rental car. I was told I didn't need a rental car. And then when I was ready to go to practice to watch Michigan practice, I got in on a Friday. I said, oh, I could use a cab. And they're like, okay, we'll call one for you. I'm like, okay, great. I call the cab company. They're like, okay, where's your address? And let's say this is, you know, 12:30, right? And practice is at 1 for Michigan. They're like, sure, where's your address? I'm like, okay, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, we'll be there in about an hour. I'm like, what? They're like, yeah, we'll be there in an hour. I'm like, so I got a rental car this time. And guess who bailed me out in that situation?
I don't know.
Matt Bilello. AB's brother. Matt Bilello awesome. Bailed me out. I had his, AB gave me his number. He said, in case you need anything while you're in Ann Arbor, give Matt a call. And if he's available, he'll help you out. So I called Matt. He came pick me up.
Did he take you by this deli? He's a guy who would know these kind of things.
He didn't, but he told me about the deli.
Okay.
So my broadcast partner for that weekend was Mike Wolf. Mike was with his wife, and this was Holy Saturday. So it was day before Easter Sunday. And Mike and his wife were driving. I can't remember where they were driving, but they had like a five-hour drive to go to family from Ann Arbor. And I go, he was telling me about Zingerman's. And I go, oh, man, you got to. He was giving me a ride to the airport. And I was like, you got to. Let's stop by Zingerman's before you. He's like, no. It's going to be at least an hour wait, and we got to get on the road, and I got to get you to the airport. So I was like, okay, fine. So I was like, next time I go to Ann Arbor, I'm going to Zingerman's.
You know, that's what your cab driver was doing. He was waiting in line for a sandwich. And that's why it took
an
hour for him to get to you.
Probably. So I go on last Friday's when I went to Zingerman's. And I asked Coach Connery, head coach of Michigan, I say, top three, what do I need to be looking at Zingerman's? And he told me, I think it was the number 34, if I'm not mistaken. This thing called a Montreal de Reuben. Brisket Reuben. Brisket, coleslaw. Oh, my God. The thing was $20, but it was Nirvana. And I think I ate around 2:30. It was a late lunch. I didn't eat again that day till like 10. And that was even, I just had like a chocolate milk that was in my room or something like that. I was so, oh yeah, the breakfast bar, the breakfast buffet.
Okay.
Soy milk, almond soy milk and chocolate milk. So I helped myself to a few of those and had those in the morning. I don't drink chocolate milk and I don't drink soy milk. So it was like a treat, you know, I'm on vacation, Dan, come on. What's the matter with you? I'm calling games, I'm on vacation. So,
all right. So
I got Zingerman's.
Okay.
Right. Then, look, I know a lot of people say Coliseum Deli around Hofstra on Long Island. I think I went there when I was doing Hopkins Radio and we did a Hofstra game, and I think we went to Coliseum, but I don't remember it. And I'm sure it was great, but I don't remember it. So the next two I'm going to name are ones that I just remember. And so Zingerman's in Ann Arbor. I'm going to go Mama Lucia on 33rd Street and Green Mountain Avenue.
Yeah.
First time I had Mama Lucia, I think was I was a rising sophomore at Johns Hopkins, and I was working Tony Seaman's lacrosse camp, Blue Jay lacrosse camp. And
Tony loved that place.
I got introduced by Dave Pretramala. So we were in Coach Seaman's office. It was me and maybe five or six other guys. Coach Pretramala, who was a grad assistant at the time, I think that was right before he left to go to Penn as an assistant coach. I think Coach Pretramala started his career as a grad assistant at Hopkins, and I think his first assistant job was at University of Pennsylvania, I think. So Pretramala was like, we're getting Mama Lucia. Who wants some? And I'm like, yeah, I'll get one. Everybody was getting the chicken cheese steak. The other thing I remember about it was Petro calls and is like, hey, is this Sal? Is this Vinny? Is this Paulie? Is this? And instead of the guy on the other end being like, no, it's
Dave.
Yeah. He was like,
or Gino.
No. He was like, no, no, no. Dave kept just throwing names out.
Oh, God,
finally, by the seventh name, it was like, oh, hey, Sal, how you doing? All right, yeah, we got a big order for you. So the chicken cheesesteak, the first time I ever had it, I think I just got like mayonnaise and fried onions or something, and it was unbelievable. Unbelievable. So Mama Lucia's.
That's probably the first time I ever had a chicken cheesesteak was at that place, too.
Yeah.
They also had a great like Italian cold cut there.
I never got anything except the chicken cheese from Mama Lucia, and I didn't get Mama Lucia that much. I think I got it on that day because Coach Seaman was paying, but I didn't have enough money. And I did have a car when I was at Hopkins, but I didn't drive it all that much. And to go that far down on 33rd Street, you know, was a hell of a walk. So I didn't have Mama Lucia-ism. I used to go to Eddie's a lot because I lived in Charles Village, St. Paul Court Apartments. I used to just walk across to Eddie's quite a bit. And then the CNC carryout on the corner of...
These can't be in your top.
They're not Eddie's, in my top. They're not in my top. I'm just saying.
Eddie's makes some good sandwiches, though.
The Smoking Jay is a really good sandwich.
And their chicken salad.
Chicken salad's awesome.
Yeah, it's really good.
I love chicken salad, by the way.
Their chicken salad is legit.
Yeah, yeah. And then you have CVP right there for all the club sandwiches, too. But no, they're not in my top three. I'm trying to... I've been so many different places covering lacrosse.
So you said the Coliseum. You said...
Well, I haven't. I said I've been to the Coliseum, but I didn't have the out-of-body experience that a lot of people have. So my top two so far are Zingerman's and Mama Lucia. And my third one's going to be the Tawny Town Deli in Catonsville.
I've never been to this place.
You've never been? So no. I grew up in Catonsville. I don't think I did. I didn't really even discover it until after college.
This is not the first time you've mentioned this place on this podcast.
It's great. So a lot of lacrosse people know this because a lot of the coaches will go when there are tournaments and or recruiting events at UMBC and in and around the Baltimore area. So Tawny Town.
I know where we're going to get. We do our fall invitational over at UMBC.
Go to Tawny Town.
I know where we're getting our lunch now.
Yeah. So it used to be you parked on Meller Avenue, and then Tawny Town was around in the alley. That was the original. Then they added an upstairs, one that's right on Frederick Road. But then there's a restaurant called Duesenberg's, and the guy Duesenberg owned Tawny Town, sold it, but then under the contingency plan of when I open up my restaurant, I'm going to take over this space as well. So they lost the downstairs space, but let me tell you, I've walked into Tawny Town. You walk into Tawny Town, and there's Bill Tierney and Matt Brown sitting at a table having a sandwich. There's Jerry Byrne and Kevin Corrigan having a sandwich. There's, just you name it, the lacrosse coaches go and get lunch at Tawny Town and go back over and watch the rest of the sessions. So there you go. I know there's plenty more out there. I know there's a bunch I'm missing, but I'll go Zingerman's. When I was in Columbus a couple weeks ago, I went to Katzinger's. That's another one. I had a fantastic sandwich. And the day after Zingerman's, I went to a place called Demo's Deli and Donuts.
Great name.
I don't know if it's in, I think it's still in Ann Arbor. That was an amazing sandwich. Oh, my God. So, but I would go Zingerman's, Mama Lucia, just for the biblical experience the first time as a young Johns Hopkins Blue Jay, and then Tawny Town Deli.
So, as you can see, Dixon gets excited about lacrosse.
Food. Oh my God. Just look at me.
So, here's my top three. None of those make my top three.
Of course not.
I haven't been to some of those, though.
You like Jason's Deli. You like Subway. When you really want to let your hair down, you go Jimmy John's. Let me guess.
My daughter starts. She went with my wife to get. My daughter's 4 and a half. She went to get a Subway. There's one in our little shopping center where we live. We can walk to, and it took a long time.
Let me just interrupt you before I forget. The other I got hooked on subs when I was in the fifth or sixth grade. Because I can't remember if we were the St. Mark Lacrosse Club or we switched over to the Catonsville Lacrosse Club, the rec program I played with. We used to do sub sales. And they were like Italian and American cold cut subs. And oh my God, they were fantastic. It was the first time in my life I ever had a sub. And so my rec lacrosse days, I'm sure Patrick Russell, Daddy Russell out there is probably listening. He could probably relate to the subs that we used to sell for the lacrosse club.
I bet he knows.
Go ahead.
I bet he's been to Tawny Town Deli, too.
Probably.
So my daughter just was waiting for a long time, so she started calling it Slugway, Slowway. It's just funny that a 4 and a half is thinking of all these ways to disparage the Subway experience.
That's good parenting.
Just like you did. So mine is, there's one local one here that's kind of famous in Baltimore, the Atman's Deli.
Yeah. Corned beef roll.
Unbelievable sandwiches. And it's a little bit far from our inside lacrosse. We're by the aquarium, right in Inner Harbor. It's a little far to walk.
Yeah.
You can
Beyond
do it.
Little Italy.
You can do it on a nice day, but it's a little bit of a walk. And they're ridiculous. They're big sandwiches. The corned beef is especially good. Last time I was in there, I haven't been there in a while, but I saw Bob Scott and Margo Scott in there.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
A great, one of the all-time great cups. And, of course, they're oh, hi, Dan, how's it going? I was with AB. I was with Annie Below. We went over there to get sandwiches a while ago, I guess. And it was great to see them and just run into, some famous people in Atman's.
And that brings up kind of a generational thing. And what I mean by that is, so like my mother loves Lexington Market. It's one of the few places in town where you can buy fresh coconut. Have you seen Lexington Market lately, though?
Yeah, don't go there much.
It is not a pretty scene. It's actually downright scary. But if my mom, if it weren't for me and my brother and my dad and other people saying, you know, yeah, you probably don't want to go down to Lexington Market anymore, you know, she would still go. Like, she would still go. I bring that up because that section, that corned beef row, has hit hard times. Yes. Like, that's a tough stretch of Lombard Street. But Mr. and Mrs. Scott, they probably have been going to, you know,
60 years.
Maybe, yeah, exactly. So it's like, hey, yeah, let's go to Atman's.
Without
kind of, you notice it, but you're like, this is one of our places. We're going to go because we love it, you know.
My father-in-law is also...
Meanwhile, we're like, you went where?
A food guy. And he always wants to go to Atman's too whenever he's
trying.
All right, so that's a good sandwich. In growing up in Delaware, they have a place called Capriotti's, which is a really good sub shop.
Is that a chain?
It's from Delaware. It's almost like Grotto Pizza is around now. Like, there was only a couple of them. There was like one in Claymont and one in Wilmington or something.
Now they've exploded.
They're all over... There was one in Las Vegas. I went somewhere and I couldn't believe that there was a Capriotti's, and it was the same logo and the same thing. I'm like, wow, they must have franchised even out here in Vegas. But they make several delicious subs. They have one particularly called the Bobby, which is like a Thanksgiving sandwich. It's like turkey meat with cranberry sauce and stuffing, and it's just perfectly proportioned. Mm-hmm. And their sandwiches are pretty big too. The Capriotti, so oh my god, it's so good.
Hey, I'm going to interrupt you again. I just made a grave omission. The wine merchant. The wine merchant has the bomber. Man, that's that. Oh,
you can also
smokes.
Get Trimino at the wine.
You
merchant.
Can get Trimino there as well. So that's another. The wine merchant is fantastic.
You gotta pick three, man.
I know it's hard for me to pick three. I did pick my three, but it's okay to have honorable mentions.
Yeah, honorable mentions. So I'll throw in an honorable mention.
Wawa?
Not my number one.
You know, Wawa's sandwiches are really good.
But come on. The White House Deli in Atlantic City is
the
favorite
fantastic.
Of my in-laws and my wife. But the best place I think I've ever had a sandwich. When I worked at the University of Pennsylvania, there was a place that was, again, a pretty good walk away from, you know, where the Palestra is and where Franklin Field is, where our offices were.
Mm-hmm.
But it was worth it on a nice day. You take a walk or even drive. And you don't really drive. There's so many options around Penn. It's like being here at Inside La Crosse and getting your car to go drive to lunch when you can walk to 30 restaurants. Just doesn't make sense. But there was one place that we would go to, and it was called Koch's Deli. It was up on 4309 Locust Street. That place, it was a $20 sandwich, basically. But
it would be,
I can't even describe it. They had names, and you had to know the menu in order to get what you want, but you could also get halves because they were so big. So you can get a half of this and a half of this.
Mm.
Oh my God. And what we would usually do is I'll get this one and you get this one, and then we'll just split them. Like,
we'll combine them.
I'll trade you. You get my half. I get a half of yours. Oh, the Koch's Deli sandwiches were.
What was your go-to? What was the sandwich that you
would get? They had like a corned beef that had coleslaw on it that was just unbelievable. It was the size of them and the specialness of it, because it's not something you could possibly eat every day or kind of really want to.
But supersize me.
Like, maybe once a month we'd go up there and have lunch. And someone would be like, because we'd play lunchtime hoops.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd be like, hey, Koch's Deli? Like, afterwards? And people are like, great call. Let's do it.
Mm.
So that is – so I'll go with Atman's, Capriotti's, Koch's Deli. And also a shout out. There is a place right down here.
You can only name three.
You only can name three. To our own Isabella's,
right, is great.
Yeah, it's like a brick oven pizzeria deli shop that is, always wins like Best of Baltimore awards. It's
how long
the corner
is that,
of Little Italy.
How long is it? How long has that been there?
I think about as long as I've been working here, so maybe almost a decade.
So I've been coming to Inside La Crosse now for
been missing out, bro.
10 years, 11 years, either in this office space or in your previous office space, which was in the Columbus building across from here.
Yeah, Pier 5.
There are times where I can't find a parking space near or next to the building, so I'll park in Little Italy and walk across, which I don't mind because it's a beautiful walk and it's a beautiful neighborhood. I can't tell you how many times we're going back to my car being like, I wish there was a deli here. I wish there was a deli. And it wasn't until February when...
I'm laughing because you've been missing out all life.
So I see a lacrosse coach and one of his players grabbing lunch. And I'm like, oh, where are you guys going? I'm like, well, this place is a Bella's. I'm like, oh, okay. Enjoy your meal. I figured it was a sit-down, like most places in Little Italy are. So I get in my car, and I'm hungry, you know, but I normally would go to the Whole Foods down in Harbor East, yeah. You know.
3 blocks from Isabella's.
Yeah. I see these guys walking up to their car with bags of sandwiches. So I'm like, so I walk into Isabella's, and I was just like, what's it? I just see the board, and it's like 15, 17, 18, 20 different sandwiches. The people are nice. You know, like, what do you need? I'm like, man, first time here. What do you think? They're like, well, you want to get to try this? You want to do blah, blah, blah. It was awesome. I think I've been there like a half a dozen times since.
Yeah. Have you had the porchetta yet?
Yes.
It's like
I have.
Shaved pork with mozzarella cheese and rosemary. And
have
oil.
I had that one?
Oh, my gosh.
I think I'm not a big pork and ham guy. Oh, I'm more of a chicken. So I do like capicola. It's another one from Annie Brothers.
Oh. They have a meatball sub over at the Isabella's that you'll never eat another meatball sub when you have theirs.
Holy smokes.
Yeah. It's you can't eat one from like a Potbelly's or Subway after that. You'll be like, I can't do that to myself.
Sometimes you have to do what you have to do.
Yeah.
If that's what you're jonesing for.
And do what we have to do is bring this podcast home.
All right.
We've been at it for...
6 hours.
We talked about food for almost 20 minutes.
That's okay.
Yeah. So if you like what you heard, and if you've gotten this far, we know that you have, please subscribe. Leave a rating on iTunes or your platform that you listen to and share it with a friend. Please share it with a friend. If you know a friend who or family member who loves lacrosse, turn them on to this. It's free, and we appreciate the listens.
I just like looked at your hair, and there's like not a hair out of place. On your head.
I'm blessed, man.
You're like finely coiffed. You got product in there too, don't you?
Yeah, you got to put a little, it's not pomade. It's something like, it's not like a gel. It's like a creamy thing that you just keeps the fly, the defly.
I just like looked at it. I'm like, it's just like high and tight. And look at you.
Just jealous.
I don't have any hair, so.
You can reach out to us on Twitter, @DixonLacrosse or @D_fly, or send me an email, DFlynninsideLacrosse. And well, what is wrong with people? Give us a phone call.
Yeah, we love phone calls.
We love the phone calls. And that number is 443-595-7020.
Repeat that again because I cut you off.
443-595-7020. Simple to remember. Just give us a call. You'll leave a voicemail and we'll plug your rant or comment. And I know you guys have hot takes after these first round NCAA games.
Hot takes. Don't even worry about the first round games. They're gonna have hot takes on the delis that we named.
Please. Please, I know we're omitting some, especially if you have some in like college towns.
Yeah.
Because those are places we probably go the most. Let us know. If you do call in, let us know who you are, where you're calling from. Always helps.
There's pretty much 100% chance your call will be played as well.
Almost. Almost. There's only a couple that we haven't played. Also, don't forget to check out our other podcasts. We drop a new one every day here. There's even a couple new ones that were pretty good. Joe Yavoli, did you hear that one?
I haven't been able to listen to that yet. Yeah.
Interviewing Petro.
It's good.
It was really, really good.
Okay.
Really good.
Yavoli, a former Virginia attackman.
Yeah. Like a long conversation with Petro about his involvement in the sport. I think it came out on like Saturday or Sunday. It was really good. Go back and listen.
I'll have to listen.
But anyway, have a great week and enjoy these games.